Good morning. Pleasure to be back here bringing the Word of God to us this morning. You know, there was this couple, pretty much like Abraham, you know Abraham, right? They can just walk into the church, right? Just a couple of steps and they are in the church. So there was a couple like them whose house was very close to the church and they could just step into the church. So on one Sunday, his wife decided that, you know, she will do some saving of time in as far as cooking is concerned. So decided to put the chicken inside to roast in the oven. And, you know, then she came to the church. She knew that the pastor was a very punctual pastor, just like our pastor is. And, you know, speaks only very, limited time. And she could be back much well in time so that the chicken is nicely roasted, you know. But unfortunately for her, the pastor had organized for a guest speaker to come and speak that day. You know, a famous guest speaker, pretty much like me, not the famous part, but the guest speaker part. And in his enthusiasm, the guest speaker went on, you know. And the wife started getting nervous because, you know, the chicken is in the oven and you know what happens when it is, when it stays in the oven for too long. So, finally, she decided to send, you know, and her husband had come earlier, and husband was sitting right in front, and she was, at the back of the church. So she decided that she should do something about it, so she got hold of a piece of paper, wrote a note, and, you know, big churches have the ushers, you know, so she handed the sheet over to the usher and asked the usher to give it to the husband. The usher mistook her and handed over the sheet to the speaker. The speaker opened the note, read the note, he abruptly stopped speaking and sat down. So, you know, and after the service was over, the pastor came and asked the speaker, hey, why did you abruptly stop like that? And he said, look, I got a hate mail from your, from one of your congregation members. And so the pastor asked, oh, really so? So what did the note say? And, so he read the note and he said, the note said, go home and turn off the gas. So, I want to be very careful today. If any of you are sending any notes, I am not taking it. Okay? I'll ask Ashish to take it from me. Alright. So, I'll try and make sure that, no, we don't disturb your plants with the oven if any of you have put your chicken to roast. Now, do any of you remember what I spoke last time when I was here? Servant leadership. Okay, thank you. Saving me. Right. So, I'm accident, and some of you might probably think that I'm using this, I'm choosing this subject because I'm doing the research, you know, on that, and it may be convenient for me to talk on this. You bet. You're right. I am doing it because it is convenient for me. But I'm doing it also because I think in churches today, there is a great need for us to understand servant leadership and also to make a conscious choice to practice it. To make a conscious choice to practice it. And, Victor Hugo, who was the author of the great classic, Les Miserables, I have to be careful in pronouncing because my co-brother, by the South Indian English term, Alan Samuel is a principal of a school and he teaches Shakespeare and he teaches the English literature, so I got to be careful. But Victor Hugo is believed to have said that there is nothing as powerful as an idea whose time has come. There is nothing as powerful as an idea whose time has come. And I believe, after having gone through this concept of servant leadership, I believe that this servant leadership is an idea whose time has come for today's churches. Today's churches, Christian organization, and even beyond, in corporate world and things like that. And so I believe that servant leadership as a concept is an idea whose time has really come. So that's one reason why, I want to continue speaking that. And as I indicated in the last In my last sermon, I'm going to pick on this topic, and as long as you permit me to do, pick up certain attributes and talk about it. But today I don't want to raise the attributes yet. Today I want to basically focus on the need for us to make a conscious choice to choose servant leadership against the what I call as the power and authority model of leadership, right? So that's what I would like to focus today. And remember, if any of you are still thinking, look, why am I sitting here and listening to a sermon on leadership? I'm not a leader. I don't want to be a leader. Remember what I've told you last time, and at the pain of sounding repetitive, let me say it again. Read John 15:16. Read John 15:16. It says very clearly, you did not choose me. I chose you. I chose you so that you can go out and bear fruit, fruit that lasts for me. So I believe that the moment anyone, we have a choice to accept Christ or not to accept Christ. All of us have got a choice in that. Right? And some of us have accepted Jesus Christ. Some of us probably might be thinking about it. But we have a choice. But once we have accepted to follow Jesus Christ, He is not giving us a choice as far as leadership is concerned. He says, I chose you so that you can go out and bear fruit. Right? So we are called to be leaders the moment the moment we accepted Jesus Christ, go out and influence the others. And hence, all of us need to choose a leadership model that we will demonstrate when we obey His commands. So there is a need for us to be able to do that. And, at my workplace, I always I draw this distinction between have to do and choose to do. When I have to talk to my team, and I'm sure most of you know the difference between have to do and choose to do. Have to do is something that we do because somebody else has told us to do, because our parents told us to do, or our spouses told us to do, or because it makes us look good. Or sort of we are constrained to do it. So we may do it, but we are still not fully responsible for it. We are still not owning it. But the moment we choose to do certain thing, it is, 100% our responsibility. And again, in my office, I use this illustration. I don't know how it will go today, especially I have my wife's family also here, so I got to be careful. When I go shopping with my wife, it is something that I have to do, but it is something that she chooses to do. So after a couple of shops, in a shopping center or in a mall, her energy levels are dum-dum-dum-dum, going up and up and up, And she's all charged up to go into the fifth shop or sixth shop and try out a few more clothes and all that. And I'm really looking for a coffee shop to sit in, rest my poor leg. So that's the difference between a have-to-do situation and a choose-to-do situation. So, I hope that I really do not want us to get into a situation where we have to do servant leadership. But I want us to be able to decide, choose to do servant leadership. Not that we got to do because somebody asked us to do or whatever, but because we choose to do that because of what we know from Jesus Christ and what He demonstrated for us. So, I always believe that God makes divine connections, plenty of divine connections. And this opportunity that God has given me to do the research for my PhD has given me so many opportunities to make such divine connections with many such people. One of them is a person called Dr. Jim Long. And he's the dean of MacArthur Institute of Leadership, MacArthur School of Leadership in Palm Beach, Atlantic University, and he has given me permission to use a lot of his material for my research. So I have actually taken some of the demonstration, some of the illustrations that I'm going to speak here to from him. There are many others who are helping me out in this. So let's get back to the subject that we wanted to choose. And we've had the Bible portions read out to us, right? So I'm going to basically take a look between and compare the choices that two people in the Bible made. And you must have guessed who are those two people after having listened to the Bible reading. So let's open our Bibles and keep a bookmark on 1 Kings 12, right? 1 Kings 12 is a story, and it actually the beginning of 1 Kings 12 is a story of Rehoboam, Solomon's son. And Arguably, you know, all of us know that Solomon was the richest and the most pompous and the most famous and the most wisest. You know, again, sorry for the using the English wrongly, but you know, so we could arguably say that Rehoboam inherited the kingdom at its best, at its richest. You know, Solomon has built up and enhanced the kingdom so much, and then Solomon goes and Rehoboam goes and does something. You know, so what happens here is when Solomon dies and Rehoboam takes over, some of the people led by this person called Jeroboam, they come and lay a condition saying that, look, if you want us to follow me, if you want us to follow you and serve you, lighten the yoke on us. Lighten the burden that your father has put on us. So Rehoboam goes and asks, asks advice. So Rehoboam goes and says, ask the elders, and the elders say that, look, and this is something that we must read and remember. You know, so what does Rehoboam say? What does the elders say to Rehoboam? He says in 12:7, it says, if today you will be a servant to these people and serve them and give them a favorable answer, they will always be your servants. If today you choose to be a servant to these people, they will always be servants to you in the future. Right? That's the first advice that he gets. But, Rehoboam, as he is young, he doesn't want to listen to the gray-haired folks, you know. So he goes and asks the younger guys and says, look, what is your advice on it? So the youngsters tell him a different advice, you know, which is there in 10 and 11. He says, tell these people, my father laid on you a heavy yoke. I will make it even heavier. My father scourged you with whips. I will scourge you with coffee. So now, here is Rehoboam, faced with a choice of what is the leadership style that he has to demonstrate. And he has a choice between these two. One, giving away all his authority and saying that, look, I am a servant to you. And, I want to listen to you, I want to understand your pain, I want to lessen your pain. And the second choice is, saying that, look, I have inherited the power and authority that my father had. And so, I'm going to use that power and authority to make you obey me and make you serve me. See the different choices that he had. And, we know what choice Rehoboam made, right? He chose to go by the power and authority model. And he said, look, I want you to obey me because I hold the power over you. I am the king. I am the king's son. I have inherited this kingdom. And you know the consequence of that. As a consequence of that, the kingdom gets divided. And this is the first time that the kingdom gets divided, and you know the problems that Israelites go through because of this division that comes in, and the kingdom remains irrevocably divided. Now, some of us may think that, look, you know, surprising that Rehoboam did this, made this choice. But to me, it is not surprising. It doesn't surprise me that, that Rehoboam made this choice. He chose to go by the power and authority model of leadership. Let's take an interesting, I have an interesting view about the fall, right? We know where the fall happened, right? And it happened in Genesis. So let's go to Genesis. Genesis chapter 3, 4 and 5. In Genesis chapter 3, the first paragraph is where, we get the description about the fall. So let's go to Genesis chapter 3, verse 4 and 5. Here is where Satan, is coming and telling Eve about what she could do. All right? So he asked, look, hey, did God tell you not to do something? And she says, yes, God asked me not to do this. And then he says, he says this. He says, you will not surely die, the serpent said to the woman, for God knows that when you eat of it, your eyes will be opened and you will be like God. You will be like God, knowing evil from good. Now, Those of us who know the creation, we know that Adam and Eve were created in the image of God. They were already like God. Isn't it? They were created in the image of God. God said, look, let us create man in our image. And so when Adam and Eve were created, they were already like God. And here is Satan using that same, you know, the very, very, the crux of the fall. He says, look, go do something, disobey him, because if you disobey him, if you eat the forbidden fruit, you can be like God. You can be like God. You know the difference between these two? When God created man in his image, he created him and her in his character. But man was not happy with that, and Satan did not want us to be happy with that. Didn't want us to stay with that. So Satan said, look, you can be like God in power and authority. You will have the power that God has. You will have the authority to have, you know, of what God has. So the lure of the fall is basically the desire to inherit not the character of God, but the power and authority of God. And that is the fall. That's the crux of the fall. So, I mean, that's why Rehoboam's choice is not surprising to me, because it is. He is, after all, living in a fallen world. And Jesus Christ has not come by that time. He was there, but he had not come to us. So Rehoboam was living in a fallen world, the fall which happened because human beings, wanted to inherit, wanted to be like God through the power and authority model. You know? And you would see this in history. I mean, look at history. How many leaders can you really pinpoint who have chosen to serve? And how many leaders can we pick out who have chosen to use the power and authority model? Numerous. Right. You look at the secular history. We have the people like our friends Hitler, Stalin, Mussolini. You know, so many others who have. And they had a huge following. They were leaders by their own right. But I shudder at the thought of calling them leaders, because the amount of hurt, amount of pain that they created in the world is so much. You know? But they had huge fan followings. And all because human beings wanted to, you know, people want someone to lead them. People want, you know, the cults that we talk about, how do they come about? Somebody comes up with a crazy idea, and then that person is able to speak about it with authority, and sometimes, and most of the times, even quoting from the Bible, right? They quote the Bible and speak with authority, and there you have a cult form, and cults have huge followings today. Just because people are able to use that power and authority model and tell the world that, look, I can lead you into, you know, to be like God. You know, but the sad part is, even Christianity and even church are not free from this. Don't we see larger than Christ leaders today? People who call themselves Christian leaders? The last week when we met Prema and I, we were talking about somebody in Bangalore who could probably fall into this category of becoming larger than Christ. Right? You know, I had a Hindu colleague who once, he had no idea about true Christianity. We don't blame him. He asked me, are you a disciple of Dinakaran? I was a little surprised and explained to him what discipleship means. And I said, look, I only follow one leader, and that is Jesus Christ. And so I asked him, why do you ask this? He said his mother is a follower of, is a disciple. This is exactly the word he used. He used the word, he is a disciple of Dinakaran. So I asked him, hey, look, does your mother ever speak about Jesus or what Jesus did for mankind? He said, no, I've never heard her speak about Jesus, but he speaks about Dinakaran so much. You know, I don't want to pull down any person by name, I know, but I'm just saying that the way some people, some leaders, Christian leaders even, become larger than Christ, you know. Me and Alan were talking last night. one of the fears that you know I have, and I'm sure you know some of you share with it too, is that you know we take glory for the goodness of the message which comes through us, and then become you know larger than Jesus says. No messenger is greater than the person who sent the message. Now this is something that each of us need to be worried about. Each of us need to be you know careful about. And you know one of the things that we need to be careful about while choosing leaders is definitely this: that is this person likely to be larger than the congregation, larger than the mission that we have, larger than you know larger than Christ Himself. So you know, and all this happens, like I said, we because there is this choice that people can make between serving others and choosing to use the power and authority model of you know of leadership that came through because of the fall. You know, you might have heard this illustration before. On a foggy night, a captain of a ship, you know, he spots another light which you know which looks like a ship, and so he calls the signal man and asks him to signal and say to the other you know other whatever the other object is, say that look, change your course 10 degrees north. So the answer comes back saying that you change your course 10 degrees south. So this man you know this man gets a little angry, and he says he signals back saying, I'm a captain, change your course 10 degrees north. So the signal comes back saying, I'm a seaman, change your course 10 degrees south. And those of you who know the hierarchy of Navy, the seaman is, you know, right over here, and the captain is, you know, over here. So obviously when a seaman, you know, signals back saying that, look, I'm a seaman, knowing that you are the captain, change your course 10 degrees south, the captain gets furious. So he sends back, you know, the message saying, I'm a battleship, you better change your course 10 degrees north. And the calm reply comes back, I'm a lighthouse, you better change your course 10 degrees south. You know, this is what the power and authority model of leadership can do. It can go and sink your ship. And, you know, and so in churches, in organizations, in Christian organizations, if we stay with the power and authority model of leadership, we can be, you know, the followers can be destroyed. The church can be destroyed. We don't want that to happen. We definitely don't want that to happen. We definitely don't want that to happen. And so we're not, while we are not surprised. Yes, Josh, I hear you. So while we are not surprised at Rehoboam's choice, right? But we know that in the grace-driven world that we live in a grace-driven world, and in the grace-driven world that we live in, we have a better choice. We have a better choice. So many years later, after Rehoboam made his choice, Jesus Christ came and presented an alternate model of leadership. He presented an alternate model of leadership. Let us turn to Matthew. Matthew 20, 25 to 28. Yeah, quite familiar, right? I want to read this. The leadership model that Jesus came with for the new kingdom that he wanted to establish in this world is this. You know that the rulers of the Gentiles lord it over them, and their high officials exercise authority over them. Not so with you. Instead, whoever wants to become a great among you must be your servant, and whoever wants to be first must be your slave. Just as the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve, and to give his life as a ransom for many. Just as the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve and give up his life as a ransom for many. So that's the model of, you know, of leadership that Jesus Christ offered. So, you know, if Jesus was faced with the same situation that Rehoboam was in, we know what choice Jesus would have made. Right? Rehoboam was told in very clear language, if you choose to serve these people and, you know, and understand their needs, they will serve you forever. But even knowing that, he went the other way. He went the, you know, the way of the fall and chose the power and authority model. So Jesus continuously, as a greatest leader that I consider Jesus to be, he continuously said, look, I have come not to serve, not to be served, but to serve, And, you know, just before, and I want us to be, you know, clear about this, you know, and the scripture portion which was read to us from John, right? So let's go there, and John 13, you know, John chapter 13. Let's go to that scene where, you know, Jesus prepares himself for washing the feet of the disciples. And this is one act which I consider to be the best illustration, best demonstration of servant leadership. So let's just understand what happens just before that. You know, and John puts it so beautifully, John 13:3-4. He says, Jesus knew that the Father had put all things under his power. Jesus knew that the Father had put all things under his power, and that he had come from God and was going to God, returning to God. So he got up. So he got up from the meal, took off his outer clothing, and wrapped a towel around him, and went around washing the feet. Why did Jesus do it? Not because he didn't have power and authority. Not because he was not aware of what authority he held in his hands. The Bible tells us that Jesus did it fully knowing the extent of his power and authority. Right? I think the one which Prema read even put it even differently. I mean, it made it even more clear that because he knew this, he did it. Because he knew that the Father had put everything under his power and authority, he decided to get up. You know, take off his outer clothes, wrap a towel around his waist, and go and wash the feet of his disciples. So, one of the myths that people have about servant leadership is because servant leadership lacks power and authority. Wrong. Wrong. Servant leadership happens when you are aware of the extent of power and authority that you have. You know that you can do it. You know that you can, you know, you can, you have the power to do things. And then you choose not to do that, but to serve. But to serve. You know, some of you must have studied Shakespeare. So let me quote from a part of his Shakespeare's sonnet number 94, as it is said. Okay. They that have power to hurt and will do none, that do not do the thing they most do show, who, moving others, are themselves as stone, unmoved, cold, and no temptation to show, they rightly do inherit heaven's graces. Put the first sentence and the last sentence of this particular part of the sonnet together. They that have power to hurt and will do none. They that have power to hurt and will do none, they rightly do inherit heaven's graces. That's what servant leadership is about. You know you have the power. You know you can hurt. But I choose not to exercise that power to hurt or to make others follow me, but I would rather choose to serve them so that they will follow me. Follow me willingly. Follow me willingly. So in effect, a leader has the power to hurt, but a mature servant leader is one who will never, if at all, you know, rarely, but never, almost never, use that position of leadership to gain services from others, but to provide services to others. And Jesus also says, look, don't put too much weight on your position and things like that, right? He says in Mark 9:35, he says, if anyone wants to be first, he must be the very last and the servant of all. Servant leadership does not rely on position. You don't require a position or a title to be a servant leader. As long as you know that you have been given the authority from heaven. And you have. Jesus says that. Right? Through Jesus Christ, we have that power and authority. And, you know, in our positions in the church, in our positions in Christian organizations, in our positions in corporate bodies, in our position in neighborhood, in our position wherever, we have been given certain power and authority. And we have the choice to knowing that power that we have the choice of not using it to hurt others or to make others serve us, but to serve them so that they will voluntarily follow us. And that's what I want us to bring us to this morning. That's the crux of the message that I want us to bring. You know, if you really look at the history, Jesus' teachings have been radical. Many of his teachings have been radical, and his own disciples, have said, "Look, this is too hard." And a lot of people decided to leave his team because they found his teachings to be too hard. And we find that the history, a lot of people have found that these are too radical for us to follow, so we won't follow Jesus' teachings. And that's one reason why servant leadership is not popular, because it is radical. Because it is against the grain of human desire to be led and to lead and to use our power and authority over others. And history will show that not many people chose. They went back to the power and authority model. You look at the Christian history, the Crusades and the power struggles between the clergy and the rulers and kings. You look at the denominations which have come, you look at the institution of the Pope itself. It's not based on servant leadership. It's not based on the concept of servanthood. Because it is radical, because it is difficult to follow. And so a lot of people chose to not to follow servant leadership, but to follow the power and authority model of leadership. But fortunately for us, there are some people who did follow to be servant, and one of them is Saint Augustine, and I want to quote from him, from Saint Augustine. He says, "For you, I am a bishop, but with you, I am a Christian. For you, I am a bishop, but with you, I am a Christian. The first is an office that I accepted. The first is an office that I accepted. The second, a gift that I received." Okay? One is danger. The other is safety. The position is danger, and the gift that I receive is safety for me. If I am happier to be redeemed with you than to be placed over you, then I shall, as the Lord commanded, be more fully your servant. Now, how I wish that a lot more Christian leaders of today, a lot more corporate leaders of today. And let me remind you, servant leadership is not, should not be, it should not be limited to churches. I can show you, for those of you who want to, I can give you case studies of successful Fortune 500 companies in the world. Companies who are listed at the top of Fortune 500, not at the bottom of Fortune 500. Companies who have sown by servant leadership and succeeded by servant leadership for almost. If you look at that book, The 100 Best Companies to Work For in America, you will find more or less, five or six of the top 10 have publicly admitted that they follow the servant leadership model, and that's one reason why people choose to work for them. Right. Those of you who are interested can come to me and I can share those names and case studies with you. So what I wanted to highlight is it is not a principle that we need to restrict to the church and on Sundays and for church mission work. It is something that we need to take it to our neighborhood, to our mission field, to our workplaces, and see how we can how we can really use that concept to bring people more to Jesus Christ. So this morning, Jesus is asking us to make that choice. Jesus is asking us to make the choice between power and authority model of ownership and that of servant leadership. Let me close by repeating the reading that we had from John 13. It's important for us to know, because we are followers of Christ. We profess to be followers of Christ. Please turn with me to John 13, 12 to 17, which was read out by Prema. When he had finished washing their feet, he put on his clothes and returned to his place. And then he asked, "Do you understand what I have done for you? You call me teacher and Lord, and rightly so, I am, for that is what I am. Now that I, your Lord and teacher, have washed your feet, you also should wash one another's feet. I have set you an example that you should do as I have done for you. I tell you the truth. No servant is greater than his master. There is no messenger greater than the one who sent him. Now that you know these things, you will be blessed. Now that you know these things, you will be blessed if you do them. If you do that. So, Jesus is asking us, I have demonstrated, you know the golden rule, right? The golden rule that Jesus kept in front of us. Do unto others as you want to be done to you. That is the golden rule. And he's saying the same thing here. I have done this to you, so I have set you an example. So please go and do that for others. Now that you know these things, you will be blessed if you do that. May I request ask you to please close in prayer and benediction.
So they continue to give number